The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got a great show for you today. In this half hour of the show, we will be interviewing Professor Dr. Deborah Lipstadt. She's been on the show before. She is coming tomorrow to Congregation Shari Tzedek. The Federation has organized a day, Hope Against Hate, Building Resilient Jewish Communities in the Face of Threat. It's an all-day thing, and they have a thing tomorrow night. We'll talk about it. We'll give you all the details. The portion of the week is the portion of Emor and can be found in the book of Leviticus, chapter 19 and following. And we'll be talking about that in the second half hour of the show. We have lots of continued a cappella music for your listening pleasure. And dynamite Hasidic story at the end. Famous story, actually. And before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. President Trump met with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas in Washington. Trump said he is sure he can pull off a Middle East peace deal. Okay. Hamas in Gaza released a new statement of purpose. That's kind of like sort of like a constitution, but not really. In an effort to get international funding, the new document does not say that Hamas will destroy Israel as the previous one did, but doesn't say that Israel has the right to exist either. The new document also disavows dealings with the Muslim Brotherhood so that Egypt will come on board. A deputy company commander was fired and four IDF soldiers were disciplined after a man snuck past the Lebanese border. The man was arrested a day later in Kiryat Shmona and returned to Lebanon. Israel is withholding $1 million of its funding for UNESCO. Why are they giving any money for UNESCO? After a resolution passed that condemns the country's sovereignty in Jerusalem. Israel's annual contribution to the United Nations is over $40 million. It's like, why? $6 million in dues was withheld following a Security Council resolution condemning settlements last December. An unidentified man started a fire in a Jewish school's school bus in Brooklyn, using religious books he found in the vehicle as kindling. The fire broke out in the vehicle. The man broke into the vehicle and set it ablaze. Police have security footage and are looking for, as the policeman would say in New York, they're looking for the pipe, for the perpetrator of the crime. President Trump signed an executive order allowing the IRS not to take away tax-exempt status from houses of worship that engaged in political campaigns. Since 1954, the passing of the Johnson Amendment, such political activities by churches, synagogues, mosques, and etc. were prohibited to keep churches away from politics. And finally, Texas became the 22nd state with laws or executive orders banning state business with companies that support the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement against Israel. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. Let's play a little music for you, just get us a little warmed up. This group is an a cappella group from Israel. It's called Keep Alive, which is a portmanteau of the word kippah and alive. So you put them together, you get Keep Alive. And the song that we're playing is called Best Day Yachad. Yachad means all together.
I had a dream so big and loud. I jumped so high, I touched the clouds. Whoa, whoa, Yachad, Levelel, Miftach, Betikva, La'ahava. I had a dream so big and loud, I jumped so high, I touched the clouds. The sky, we danced with monsters through the night. Oh, 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 oh.
Ich shehalev niftach.
Possibilities, no limits, just epiphanies.
I'm never gonna look back. Whoa, I'm never gonna give it up. No, please don't wake me now.
Yachad, lev el lev, niftach v'nireh. Shabashamayim yachad lev el lev niftach betikva la'avar.
Doom, 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 doom. This is gonna be the best day of my life. My life. Doom, 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 doom. This is gonna be the best day of my life.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Herschel Finman, you're here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. I don't know if singing ability is hereditary, but it kind of seems that way, even though I can think of probably a dozen children of famous singers who are like really bad and who tried. But this next young man up, his name is Yisrael Amar. He is the great-grandson of the famed Joel Amar. And this song is called Yosef HaTzadik, Joseph the Righteous.
side by side to hoy ross flame burning inside together.
Assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. I think we've got time to squeeze in another song right here. This coming up next is called Kol Torah, and this is the Yedidia Choir.
ציפוי לא יצבא, איף לא יפרח, שלא יגאו, בפנים לא יפו, סלופתים לא יומדו, קודוש. היום לא ינזדזה, הבדי יא יסליטי בנו, אלוהי למשו יסה, ומחריש, Shepherds, coil toiro. The Yotso, a coil toiro. The Sis gave in the Este coil toiro. And I hear a shemel kecho. The Bashepherds, coil toiro.
Coil. σαν ακόδο εισπορουχού.
Herschelfin here, back again. That was the Yedidia Choir, and that we're singing Kol Torah. We have on the line Professor Deborah Lipstadt, who's a professor at Emory and involved with fighting Holocaust denial, will be in town tomorrow. How are you, Deborah? If you could punch her up, please. I don't know how to do that. Thank you. Get all the pages on the right page, and I have to click. Last time I did that, I lost the person. Okay, but we'll give it a try. So the program is called Hope Against Hate, Building Resilient Jewish Communities in the Face of Threat. It's tomorrow, May 8th, the Congregation Shari Tzedek.
Okay, I'm back.
Okay, good. Good to hear you. Okay, so you're going to be coming to Detroit and be talking about the book that you wrote, which was turned into a movie called Denial, about fighting people who want to erase the idea of the Holocaust. So if you could tell us, Deborah, how did you get involved? What's your interest in fighting Holocaust denial?
Well, I was actually, it's a strange kind of story, given that it's shaped so much of my professional life over the past, 20 years, something like that. I originally came to the topic, I was asked by two professors at Hebrew University. They suggested that I look at Holocaust deniers, that I study that. I was between projects, and these two very prominent historians of the Holocaust approached me and said, we think this is something worth studying. I was very surprised. I didn't think, you know, they were worth studying. I thought they were just a bunch of kooks. But they said, no, how are they managing to gain any traction? Are they gaining traction? So I began to look at them, thinking it would just be one book on the topic. And I found that, you know, they were anti-Semites and neo-Nazis parading as people engaged in rational discourse, anxious to just find out what was going on, what mistakes had been made in history. They were very self-righteous, you know, oh, we're not anti-Semites, we're just looking at mistakes in history. But when you dug down an inch beneath the surface, you found anti-Semitism, you found racism, you found extremism. So I wrote about them and published the book, and then shortly thereafter, I learned after the book was published in England that David Irving, then who was arguably probably the world's leading, most important, most significant Holocaust denier, was suing me for libel, having called him a denier in the book. And that surprised me because he seemed to be quite proud of being a denier. He talked about it publicly. He taunted survivors. He made speeches about it. So I was quite surprised when that happened. And then I wrote there was a major lawsuit, which I'll be talking about when I come to town, and also depicted in the movie Denial. And then the rest is history, you know. I wrote a book about it. The book was optioned for a movie, and that's the story. I don't come from a family of survivors. Obviously, I'm from a Jewish family with roots in Europe, so I lost family, but not immediate family. My interest is both in people who, in the history of the Holocaust and the history of anti-Semitism, and people who pervert the truth, which is becoming more common today.
Okay, so let me ask you, Deborah Lipstadt, why, I'm assuming this was like a civil suit, and he was suing you for monetary damages. And for something which was plain as day, was he just looking for like a platform for further spew?
It's unclear. You know, it's unclear, and I never spoke to him. I don't talk to him, so it wasn't like I asked him. I think he thought I wasn't going to fight. I think he thought I would just settle. I don't know what he was actually thinking. You know, and I didn't spend too much time trying to figure it out. But I think maybe he was trying to scare me and scare other people who write about him. I'm not sure. I don't think he thought it through, because if he had thought it through, he would realize that it was a fool's errand.
Mm-hmm. So what was his claim, and how did you defend that?
What we did, I think this is very important. Again, I'll be talking more about this on Monday. what he did, what we did, was not prove what happened during the Holocaust, but we proved that what he said happened did not happen. And it's a distinction with a very big difference. So in other words, we weren't proving how many people were murdered, but when he says only, and I put only, of course, in quotation marks, 67,000 died is the word he uses at Auschwitz-Birkenau. We, and then he cites a source that he says proves it. We showed that his source didn't prove it. When he says Hitler tried to stop Kristallnacht, we showed that his source doesn't prove it. So over and over again, we went to his sources and proved that either they were lies, they were misrepresented, or they just didn't prove what he said they proved. So we took the ground out from under him rather than proving what happened.
Okay, so that sounds very simple. How did you turn that into a book?
Well, it wasn't so simple. I mean, we had five experts who practice footnotes. He's written a tremendous amount. We had to go to the source. We had to show the judge why this didn't prove what it said. It was 4 years of preparation between the time he sued me and the time we went to court. It was close to 4 years. And then there were 2 years of appeals after that. And it also got tremendous attention in the press. Front page news when we won. So I told the story of what happened, and in the course of doing, I sort of exposed what deniers are about and what their modus operandi is.
Okay, so how long ago did this occur?
The trial was in 2000. The appeals were about 2 years later. So it's been now quite a while, but. They come back. They come back in different – deniers come back in different formats. You know, sometimes they come back as hardcore deniers denying the facts. Sometimes they come back as softcore deniers not denying the facts but twisting them and, playing with them or making false analogies and that kind of thing.
Okay. The whole idea of Holocaust denial to me just totally and completely behooves me. I don't even see how such a thing is possible, given that...
Let me stop you there. In the same level, I don't see how a Holocaust is possible, yet it happened.
If I'm going to finish my statement, though, the Nazis were really into documentation, and they had all those numbers that were tattooed on people's arms. They knew exactly what was happening with every single one of them, and it's all written down, and there was all this, there's a big thing about how IBM developed the card reader system for them. It's another scandal that was perpetrated. How could anybody come up and honestly believe that it never happened? It's just totally mind-boggling.
Okay, the whole thing is mind-boggling. But I think, first of all, the IBM story is that IBM was not involved in the terms of the work that was done in murder and the death camp. So we should, they may have done some other things, and it was an IBM subsidiary. So I don't want to unnecessarily besmirch their name. But on the bigger issue of your question, which is a very important question, I think that your approach is the approach everybody takes. How can they doubt, this is one of the best documented genocides in the world? How is that possible, et cetera, et cetera? I want to rephrase the way we look at it. Their doubts are not, and again, I will explore this on Monday, are not the results of a cognitive error. In other words, it's not that they didn't see one document, or they haven't seen one book, or they haven't seen one particular thing. But they have come to it, for anyone to believe that the Holocaust didn't happen, that the Jews pulled off this scheme, that the Jews were able to convince the world of this in such a way, is someone who comes to this already from the beginning, from the outset, with an anti-Semitic perspective on the world, thinking that Jews could pull this off, thinking that Jews could plant this documentation, thinking that Jews could get the Allies to agree to do this, is all, someone who could believe that has to have, A, a conspiracy theory view of the world, and B, an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory. So it's not that if we showed them one more document, we showed them one more book, and introduced them to a survivor who told the story, they would believe it. It's that they're looking at the world through an anti-Semitic lens. The lens in their glasses is anti-Semitic, and they just despise Jews, despise the fact that Jews may get sympathy because of this, because that Jews make Germany look bad. They love Germany, all those kind of things.
Uh-huh. So if you're just joining us, our guest today is Deborah Lipstadt. She's wrote a book a while ago called Denial, and it was made into a movie, and they will be showing it tomorrow at Shari Tzedek. The movie showing is at 5 o'clock, followed by Dr. Lipstadt presenting from 7:30 to 9 o'clock to talk about it. And then there's a whole conference before that, and we'll give those details soon. So I would assume that you still have your finger on the pulse of Holocaust denial. So if you were drawing a sine curve on a graph piece of paper, a bell curve, where are we since you won the case as far as Holocaust denial? Is it more? Is it less? Is it the same?
That's a good question. What I would say is that in terms of hardcore denial, people who deny the fact there were no gas chambers, Hitler didn't want to kill the Jews, the Jews weren't there, there weren't 6 million Jews who died, it's actually gone down since I won the case. We really pulled the rug out from under hardcore deniers. What has gone up is what I call softcore denial. Not denying the facts, but twisting them. Talking about, when you talk about Israel, talking about the Nazi-like tactics of the IDF or something like that. And you can disagree with Israel's policies. You can think the IDF has made mistakes. No army doesn't make mistakes. It's made up of people who make mistakes. But to talk about the Nazi-like tactics is just grotesque. Or Marine Le Pen, who's now in the running for the presidency of France, saying, oh, the French had nothing to do with the July 1942 roundup. That's nothing to do with France. Well, that's just crazy. It was a French idea. It was a French program. The French is, you can go to, your listeners can Google July 42 Paris roundup of Jews and look at images. And they'll look in vain for any images of a German officer or a German official. They're all French policemen. So that kind of softcore denial, or Ken Livingstone, the very liberal former mayor of London, talking about Zionists and Nazis collaborating. So it's not denying the facts, but it's twisting the facts, often with a somewhat anti-Semitic perspective. And it comes from the right, and it comes from the left. I'm an equal opportunity critic here in terms of politics.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Joe person in the street, so what could they be doing about softcore Holocaust
denial?
Well,
I think, you know, first of all, we have to educate ourselves, and we have to challenge people if we hear people saying this. You know, where's your evidence? Where's your proof? They can cite my case. There's so much information. In fact, something that might be of interest here to your listeners, I've set up a website through my university called HDOT, www.HDOT, Holocaust Denial on Trial, .org. And it's a website which documents all the information about the trial, reports the judge's judgment, and common claims made by deniers and common answers given to deniers, and the way of answering deniers. So we have to educate ourselves. We have to be prepared for this kind of thing, and we have to know that at its heart, again, as I want to go back, because I know our time is running short, that we don't think of it, oh, these people just made a mistake, oh, they're missing some information, but we recognize that this is a form of anti-Semitism.
Okay, indeed. So I think we're wrapping it up over here. Where are we going now? What's the future for fighting Holocaust denial then?
You know, I know one way. I teach and I write, and I keep teaching, and I keep writing, and I keep talking. I just gave, again, your listeners may be interested, I just gave a TED Talk, which has just gone up on the TED website, on exactly this, on Holocaust denial and its bigger ramifications, so they can go to the TED.com website and see it there. I'm just, you know, continuing on the fight and trying to wait for the good fight, and hope I'm making a difference.
Okay, that's going to wrap it up for us. Again, our guest has been Deborah Lipset. She's a professor at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. We'll be here tomorrow night talking about a film that was based on a book that she wrote called Denial, and the movie also happens to be called Denial. That's at 5 o'clock tomorrow at Shaarit Zedek. Deborah will be speaking at 7:30 after the movie till about 9 to answer questions and focus on things. And there's also an all-day conference, as close as all days. You can starting at noon at Shaarit Zedek, Fight or Flight, a conference on the modern Jewish community. And for more information, you can contact the Jewish Federation. This is one of their projects. Deborah Lipset, I want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing insights with us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me, and I look forward to seeing people in Detroit. My mother was raised in Detroit, have family in Detroit, so it's a little bit of a homecoming.
That's such a small world. Okay, take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Do you or someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox. Hey, Schulfman, here you're listening to The Jewish Hour. That was Deborah Lipset. We cut short the last musical piece, which was Coulter and Yedidia Choir, because Professor Lipset was on a very limited schedule and could only give us just whatever she was able to give us. So what we're going to do now, I don't think I've ever done this before, is we're going to pick up where we left off in a song. And so as soon as my trusty board up says that he's got it cued to the right place, we will be again playing the Yedidia Choir, playing Kol Torah, which means the voice of the Torah. We get
Shoy loy go we fan em loy afu selofim liom ru kodoy ayom loy nizaza haberi yo is loy bibru eloy lom shoy sek umachari Zerofim eloi yomru kodosh Ayom eloi nizdaza Haberi yoi sedibiru Eloi lam shoysay Umaharish Yaidi yotso akkoim toiro Rasiz yevin de erstekko Shefes koil toiro Oy, yotso akoy toiro Toiro
Giving dir eshte koil toiro
השפס
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurances accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herschel Finman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. This week's Torah portion, which is read in the synagogue, is called Emor. It is in Leviticus chapter 19. It has an interesting distinction that it's the only single portion in a month. So there were the last two weeks were double portions. Next week will be a double portion, and that's all to facilitate that we begin the book of Numbers before the holiday of Shavuos, which is the holiday of the Pentecost. So, but that's neither here nor there. The portion starts, Emor el HaKohanim, tell the Kohanim. The Kohanim were the people who were running the temple in Jerusalem. In such a way that they would be telling their kids and telling their kids and telling their kids. It's a very interesting thing. Up to this point, since the beginning of the Bible, until this point, which is Leviticus, I think we're up to about 40 portions in. There have been probably, of the 613 mitzvahs, more than about 400 of them have already been taught. This is the first mention of education, which is very surprising because everybody knows that Jews are really into education. It goes beyond thought that they're how much Jews are into education. I had knew a lady whose name was Emma Shaver of blessed memory, who was an opera singer. She got permission from the U.S. Army to go perform in the displaced persons camps in Europe, throughout Europe and the American zone. It's a whole story in and of itself. But the point I want to bring out is she said she played, unbeknownst to me until that time, I thought just Jews were in displaced persons camps. But no, there were Poles and Slavs and Russians and Roma and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all the different various groups. And she said she'd go to all these other displaced camps and people were just sitting. They're depressed. The kids are running around wild. She came to like Pucking, which was a very large Jewish displaced camp. And what did she find? Kids sitting and learning in school. It's like, you're here. There's no reason why you shouldn't be learning. So there's such a tremendous emphasis among Jews about education. And here it is. You would think that right after we get to Anechi Hashem Elokecha, I'm the Lord your God, it should say, teach it to your kids. No, it doesn't. So what's the deal here? Why is there this way? And why is it presented in this way? That it's talking to these Kohanim, to these priests, that they should teach their kids how to work in the temple. There is nothing random about the Bible. The Bible is set up in a way that even the way in which it's set up teaches us lessons. The way in which the Torah tells the Kohanim priests to educate their children is not to use the word lemoid, which is the normal word for teach. And Judaism, in Hebrew, there's probably about a dozen words for that mean to learn or to teach. Learning is what the student does. Teaching is what the teacher does. But it's like, whose side of the board are you on? Whose side of the desk are you on? But it's the same verb, learning and teaching in Hebrew. And there's 12 different ways, depending on the nuance. The word which is used here is lehizaher. Means to like caution them or warn them. Don't do this or that's going to happen. The root of the word warn, zohar, also means to shine. The Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, was very big on inserting this in a homiletic way, that whenever the word zohar, meaning to be careful, he would always translate meaning to sparkle. So that when we teach children now, is what are we teaching them? We're teaching them, this is coming through the priests, that everything that our children do should be instilled with a sparkle so that they sparkle and then they can teach their kids to sparkle. I've coined the phrase when I first came to, maybe before I came to Detroit 30 years ago, and people ask me, what do I do for a living? So I tell them, I show people how Judaism is interesting, exciting, and fun. It's not dreary. It's not something that has to be trudged through. It's not burdensome. I mean, there's what to do. There's responsibilities. But no, it's exciting. And it's how is it conveyed to our children? Do they want to do it? Are they excited about doing it? It says that this was done specifically. Okay, so fine. It doesn't answer the question then. Why specifically was it done for the Kohen? Why did God wait till the 2/3 of the way of the book of Leviticus to suddenly tell people that, oh, by the way, you know, it's a good idea if you teach your kids? The Kohanim, it says, were known for their zrizus. Rashi brings this down, the classic commentator, that they were diligent, they were filled with alacrity. They did, it's even starting with the progenitor of the Kohanim, Aaron, Moses' brother, that it points out that Aaron did everything that he was told. Well, like duh, you would think he would, but even the slightest detail was not overlooked. And they were very, very careful. And he instilled within his clan, the Kohanim, the priests, this need for care for detail. So we're telling also our children that we have this need and care for detail. And it's put specifically in the portion of Emor as one of the things. The first part of the portion deals with the Kohanim and they're going into the Holy of Holies, etc. How they're how a Kohen is supposed to behave, who's he supposed to marry, etc. At the end of the portion, it talks about the holidays. And it's very interesting what it mentions there, because holidays are determined in Judaism to be those days in which most work is forbidden. Not like the Sabbath, where pretty much all work is forbidden, but on a holiday, you're allowed to cook, you're allowed to carry. So it lists there in the portion of Emor the three festivals of Passover, Shavuos, and Sukkos. And it also lists the high holidays of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And it also lists the counting of the Omer, which is what we're doing now. And we're in that time period between Passover and Shavuos. It's not a holiday. The day after Passover, the second day of Passover, they would go into the field. They would cut a certain size amount of barley from the field. They would offer on the altar and signify that now the new grain was ready to be eaten. Okay, there was 48 days left until Shavuos. So there wasn't a whole lot done then. We count every single day. And when we count every single day, there's 49 days. There are 7 character traits. Each of the seven contains all of the seven character traits, so there are 49 individual character traits. So each day, we're improving so that we go from Passover, which is the birth of the Jewish people, the beginning, and we go to Shavuos, the holiday of the Pentecost, which is the finale. That's really sealed that the Jewish people have their purpose in the world and are given their marching orders and told this is the way it's going to work and this is how you're going to work. And so we are preparing during this time in such a way, how? In a way of Zohar, in a way of sparkle. We're going to take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Spex Howard. The Spex Howard School of Media Arts is proud to have been a sponsor of The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding comes from its sponsors, listeners like you help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. That's 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Your help is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Hey, Schulfinman here. You are listening to The Jewish Hour. Would you like to get in touch with me? Very simple. Go on your computer and go on the web and go to my website, rabbifinman.com. That's www.rabbifinman.com. And right on the homepage is a contact us link where you get to contact me, and it goes right to the inbox of my computer at the speed of light. And I get to answer you. And I appreciate anybody who... just any type of letter that I get, all the fan mail is good. If you have something that you like, something that you didn't like, some way that you think that the show could be improved, something you'd like to hear, something you wish you never heard ever again, you just feel like schmoozing, as the case may be, it's all good. Go to rabbifinman.com, contact us. What else is on rabbifinman.com? I hear you asked. Since you're there already, well, there's about 2 years of the show archived, so you can listen to yours truly if you want to catch up on any of the Jewish Hour. Most of the stuff is still pretty relevant. Okay, so there are things like, you know, it'd be nice to know what the year in review was in September or so. We always do the year in review right before Rosh Hashanah. And you could hear what our pundits' opinions were of the Hebrew year 5776. That's still good. You know, it's all good. You'll also find archived editions of the E-Parsha, the U-Parsha, the Hasidic U-Story, classes. These are different ways in which yours truly conveys the messages of Judaism in a hopefully entertaining and educational manner, and all very easy to understand. But it's not watered down. It's just made easy to understand. And, of course, the very important donations page. We're in May already, and we're still looking at the statement that says, please pay March. So we're falling behind. Yes, it happens, you know, but, you know, I know it's, listen, we're in our 21st year. I'm doing this every week. At the end of the show, I'm devoting this amount of time to arouse your interest to help keep Detroit's and Michigan's only Jewish radio program on air. We have sponsors, yes, but mostly it's listeners like you who do support the show and keep it going. And it just amazes me that no one has ever come and said, here's $50,000, keep the show on the air for the next whatever, and then I wouldn't have to raise funds for it. No, that never happens. It comes in little drips and drabs, and eventually the bills get paid. And to me, it's just miraculous. I can see divine intervention by how you are going to the computer. So go to the computer. It doesn't have to be a massive donation. Donations are accepted, whatever amount. If you want to do $5, fine. Go to the computer, click on the $5. I'm not sure if there's even a $5 link, but you can enter any number you like, and you can do it even monthly. So if it's $5 this month, it's not such a big deal. I could garner a wager that $5 next month is not going to be so hard either. In the course of a year, that's $60. And if everybody listening to the show decided that they're going to get $5 a month, I would definitely not be sitting here and doing this pledge pitch. So, and I've always made the promise that if we're paid in full, I don't do this. And it happened that actually in the last 21 years, for 1 week, the last week of a month, I didn't ask for money because we were paid. And there's no reason to ask for money if we're paid. So go to the computer. Don't like doing internet giving? Understood. Drop your contribution in an envelope or anything else which the mail carriers will deliver to 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48237. The story involves the Baal Shem Tov, the founder of the Hasidic movement. The Baal Shem Tov was asked to perform a wedding in a town somewhere close to proximity to his town, which was called Mezhebuzh. And the only thing I know about Mezhebuzh is that it's many, many miles east of Grosse Pointe Farms. And so this is a nearby town, which is also still many, many miles east of Grosse Pointe Farms. As part of the wedding procession, and they're all going, they have the bride, the groom, the bride's family, the groom's family, and they're parading in the streets in these little towns is what they were wont to do. Suddenly the Baal Shem Tov, who was going to be officiating, broke away and went over to a young man sitting in a wagon. And he went and he said something to the man, and then he walked back to the procession. The Baal Shem Tov's followers were thinking, ooh, who is that guy? He must be one of the 36 hidden righteous people in the world. We're going to go find out. And indeed, the next day, they found out where this person was staying. And they greeted him. Welcome, Rebbe, which is like, you know, the supreme title. And he looked at them and said, I'm not a Rebbe. What are you talking about? I'm a simple person. And they said, but we saw our Rebbe came and spoke to you. He stopped in the middle of a wedding procession and he spoke to you. And the man said, let me tell you a story and you'll see how great the Baal Shem Tov really is. I have a next door neighbor. I live from town so-and-so, which is another couple of towns over, also east of Grosse Pointe Farms. And my next door neighbor and I, we're really good buddies. I'm in his house. He's in my house. I don't knock. He doesn't knock. So one day I come and walk in and he's got this thing. He's got like a party going on or something in his house, whatever. I don't remember the detail. And this man walked into his friend's study and he saw a bag of money sitting on the man's desk just right out. So he thought, this is stupid. I'm going to teach this guy a lesson. And I took the money and I put it in my pocket just to show him that you don't do that. Someone could take it. So what happened is the party went on and then suddenly we heard a scream and the man is like fainted. What happened? Somebody took the money that was on the table here. Oh, woe is me. It was like my fortune and I'm lost and we're going to be destitute and oh, terrible things. And at that point, I became very embarrassed. Oops. I don't think I should have taken the money. And I just kind of like left. And now I said, I don't know what to do. I have this money and he needs the money. And how am I going to give it? He's going to hate me forever. And everybody's going to know that I'm the thief. And it's going to be terrible. And maybe I'll get thrown in jail. And who knows what the consequences will be. And it's really bad. And this went on for 3 weeks. In the meantime, my friend is really languishing. He's like sick over it that he doesn't have this money. So I decided I'm going to go to the Baal Shem Tov. And I pulled into town. And I heard, oh, the Baal Shem Tov is the next town over. He's doing a wedding. So I went to the next town over. I pull into that town, and I see the procession. The Baal Shem Tov locked eyes with me, and he walked over, and he left the procession, and he said, without me saying anything, you have nothing to worry about. Go home, return the money, and everything will be fine. That's going to do it for us today. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope we hope you have a great week. Next week is Lagbomer, boy. We got a lot going on next week. Next Saturday night at Jewish Ferndale, 10 p.m., we got the Lagbomer barbecue. Lagbomer Bonfire. We have the barbecue on next Sunday, the 14th. That's at 5 o'clock. Go to the website, www.jewishferndale.com, and check it out. And have a great week.